Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for April 9th, 2010.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
The strongest beetle we had was able to support a weight of just over 1,100 times its own body size.
The materials that we bring back are going to be isolated from pretty much everything until we analyze them, material that should be almost unchanged from the early solar system.
We need to be more prudent in our use of medications. We just need to be more aware of the afterlife of pharmaceuticals.
This week, we'll tell you why getting clean could dirty the environment and how NASA scientists plan to search for the origins of the solar system in asteroids. We'll also look into how a psychological phenomenon called priming could affect student performance in the classroom. But first, Suzanne Bard reports on a dung beetle that's broken the record for the world's strongest insect.
Dung beetles are best known for their delightful habit of eating poop. But now a species called Ornithophagus taurus has earned another claim to fame. It's the strongest insect on record, according to biologist Lee Simmons of the University of Western Australia and Rob Nell of Queen Mary University of London. Nell says they put the beetle through its paces.
The strongest beetle we had was able to support a weight of just over 1,100 times its own body size. And for us, that would be the equivalent of a human wedging themselves in the tunnel with their elbows and knees and then having six double-decker London buses hung from them.
He says this beats a rhinoceros beetle's previous record of lifting 850 times its own weight.
Nothing from the insect world, really, that we can find that anyone's measured comes close to this.
Nell says he studies the insects because he wants to know how animals use the food they eat.
You've got a certain amount of protein, a certain amount of fat, a certain amount of energy, and you can distribute that between various things in different ways.
He says the male dung beetles actually come in two different forms,
which are both from the same species, and in fact they can develop into either form. But one kind of male grows large horns and will fight over access to females for mating, whereas the other kind of male doesn't grow horns and tries to get sneak matings, so it hangs around outside a burrow, and when the big male with the horns that's guarding the female is distracted, a little guy will sneak in there and mate with her.
He says the strongest males are the ones with horns, and they allocate the energy from the food they eat very differently from the wimpy sneaker males.
What we found was that when they get the good food, the ones with the horns put all of that resource into getting stronger. And that makes sense from an evolutionary point of view, because the strength of a male beetle is going to determine whether or not he wins the fights and is able to get those matings with the females. And we found that the ones that don't fight, that are from the same species, don't invest anything in strength, so whether they've been fed a good diet or a poor diet doesn't make any difference. They're always a bit feeble and can only hold 300 times their own body weight. But what they do is they grow much bigger testes. So the big beetles, that if you give them good food, their testes don't get any bigger, but they get stronger. And the small beetles, when you give them good food, don't get any stronger, but they grow bigger testes.
This allows the sneaker males to compete with the bigger horned males by producing more sperm with which to fertilize the females.
Thanks, Suzanne. I had no idea there was so much to learn about dung beetles. Well, speaking of insects, plants are constantly being eaten alive by them, so it's not surprising that they've developed some extremely potent insecticides. In the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry, Brazilian scientists report that a protein found in unroasted coffee beans is a powerful pesticide, even in tiny quantities. It seems to have no effect on people, but will have to undergo more testing before it's approved for insect control in crops. And in related news, British researchers report in the journal Environmental Science and Technology that carnivorous plants may be getting sick from eating polluted insects. The insects pick up toxic metals like cadmium, which are then ingested by the plants. Carnivorous plants are disappearing from the wild, and this could be one factor. Next, our guest reporter, Karina Wu, says taking that shower could be bad for the environment.
Traces of pharmaceuticals end up in our waterways after being flushed down the toilet in one form or another. But not all medications are taken by mouth. Some are applied to the skin as ointments. That's why scientists now think bathing and showering might also be washing drugs down the drain. Eileen Ruhoy is director of the Institute for Environmental Medicine at Touro University in Nevada. I caught up with her at the recent American Chemical Society meeting in San Francisco.
How do we assess how much of that drug was washed off in a given shower? Is it all washed off in one shower? Maybe not. Maybe some remains. There's more questions than answers, certainly. But I think we're now, you know, starting to try to answer the questions in the best manner in which we can.
Ruhoy and her colleagues also identified perspiration and clothes laundering as potential sources of drugs entering the environment. She says out of the 1,500 drugs that are prescribed, showering is probably a factor for only a few of them.
For a small number of drugs, it might very well be significant. Overall, with all the pharmaceuticals that are prescribed, probably not a highly significant source. But again, for some drugs it might be, and maybe it's that drug that has a high risk for ecological effects. Maybe it's that drug that might eventually show to have risk for human exposure. We need to be more prudent in our use of medications. We just need to be more aware of the afterlife of pharmaceuticals.
She says increasing awareness of showering as a potential source of water pollution can help doctors and patients learn how to reduce it.
Thanks, Karina. When it comes to taking tests, everyone wants an A and not an F. But now researchers at the University of Missouri have found that exposure to the letter F before taking a test can actually make students more likely to fail. Ken Sheldon and Keith Ciani had students write either the letter A or F on each of the 5 pages of a basic test of analogies and anagrams. Afterwards, Ciani says they compared the students' performance.
Students that were exposed to the letter A before taking a test actually performed better than those with an F. So our conclusion is that A can actually enhance performance and exposure to F can actually hurt performance.
Ciani attributes the effect to a psychological phenomenon called priming and suggests that teachers avoid influencing their students' achievement through unconscious priming.
I would tell teachers to, you know, be careful about inserting messages that could be construed as positive or negative by students. However, some teachers may want to go ahead and adorn their classroom walls with positive messages and hope to have this effect. It's hard to tell if students are paying attention to it, but I don't think it can hurt. And I think another implication is teachers probably need to be careful about labeling different versions of tests.
Finally today, Suzanne reports on an effort by NASA scientists to sample asteroids.
Asteroids that fall to Earth reveal a great deal about the composition of the early solar system. That's because they contain remnants of the clouds, dust, and gases that formed the sun and planets 4.5 billion years ago. Unfortunately, these asteroids are easily contaminated once they reach the Earth. To get around this problem, chemist Joseph Knuth and his colleagues at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, have proposed an unmanned sampling mission to a small asteroid called RQ-36.
The materials that we bring back are going to be isolated from pretty much everything until we analyze them, material that should be almost unchanged from the early solar system.
He says one objective of the proposed mission is to determine whether asteroids contain some of the basic building blocks of life.
And one of the things that we want to find out is whether or not the organic materials, the amino acids, the sugars, the other important biochemical type molecules are in these samples. And that's something that we can't do with certainty unless we bring them back completely uncontaminated.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll have more exciting, cutting-edge science stories for you. But if you can't wait for next week's podcast, you can get your daily dose of science by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question you'd like us to answer on the show, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you'll win a Science Update mug. I'm Bob Hirsch for AAAS, the Science Society.